So we had the Adam Schefter report, which is the Browns are one of the teams that have had a preliminary, extensive phone calls with John Harbaugh as he tries to decide which teams he's actually going to interview with, Ian O'Connor. And he was a guy that said this weekend that the Giants were preparing to close on John Harbaugh. Now, I think he's walked that back a little bit. I don't think he intended...
How do you walk it back?
Well, how he walked it back was basically saying they intend to try and make a decision on him, but not necessarily that it's like fait accompli.
Okay, so he spoke a little heavy-handed.
Yes,
maybe.
Yeah. But still click on his article. he has quote tweeted the Falcons, who have said, we have interviewed John Harbaugh for their head coaching job. We talked about that about 30 minutes ago. And he said, I've always viewed the Falcons as the biggest threat to the Giants. Matt Ryan was in charge, all around, all world player in Bijan Robinson, and the easiest road to a divisional title in the NFC South. That was just won by an 8-9 team. I would not be surprised if after 18 years in the AFC North, John Harbaugh is like, I could go for an easier road.
Yeah, life on easy street.
But like, the problem is, you got to really believe in Michael Penix Jr. Because they are moving on from Kirk Cousins. They just did the contract redesign. That's, by the way, if Mike McDaniel gets a job here, I think Kirk Cousins could be the quarterback, which none of us want to hear. But that's a real possibility. Same thing if Matt LaFleur were to shake loose at any point, him or Malik Willis. But you're going to have to believe in Michael Penix Jr. And the same problem that reportedly people think is in Cleveland, that Jim Schwartz is the Browns would like him to stay as the D.C., the Falcons have already decided that Jeff Albright is going to stay as the defensive coordinator in Atlanta.
They said today that it was going to be a strong recommendation. So I do feel like there's some flexibility attached to that. I feel like, if anything, it was almost...
So anybody but Harbaugh has to take him?
Kind of what I read with it. The same thing with the Browns, and how we think about that. Well, not even with the Browns, because with the Browns, I guess it's more open than not that Jim Schwartz isn't with the guy. Because I was trying to think about this earlier, right, as the Falcons report actually popped up on my phone. Like, how many of these teams are trying to force the defensive coordinator or the offensive coordinator on their potential new coaches? Mm-hmm. And I it really hadn't been many. And then, like a gift from Manna, it just popped up right there that it was like, oh, yeah, Atlanta says, with Jeff Albright, it's like, yeah, you can basically we request that you have them, but it's not a certainty.
So I think I've stayed pretty consistent in that I need Jimmy to pursue John Harbaugh with a tenacity and with an intensity previously unknown to mankind.
Sure.
Like, I need him to bird dog him.
Yeah.
I also understand that there has to be interest in both parties. And Jimmy could throw out $30 million a year. It's not going to matter if John Harbaugh just looks at every other job and says, those are better jobs for what I want.
Well, that's where we got to figure out what he's motivated by.
Yeah. And I don't know at 63, given that he's been an NFL head coach for 18 years, so and comes from a football family, he's worked in football, I don't know that money's going to be the end-all be-all, other than money is a sign of power. I do think power is going to matter. But it might be as simple as Andrew Berry can stay and pick the players as long as I have control of the 53-man roster.
Well, I would imagine some of the things that he wants is some of the things... I think about this with the Browns, with Haslam, and how many different people come from situations where they didn't even know that an owner could be problematic, etc. The thing about the Ravens ownership with Piscotty was that he was very, very involved while giving off the idea and the perception that he isn't.
Yeah.
So, like, most people think that he's not involved, but if you talk to people around the league, he was incredibly involved. And so the thing I think about with the Browns kind of losing in this regard is that I don't know that Harbaugh wants to go through with a very involved owner once again, because if you've been involved with that, and he clearly just... The reason why he got fired is because he lost out that power battle where the owner wanted one thing, even when, like, Sashi Brown is trying to save him. I just don't know if you sign up that easily for that. But Arthur Blank is... I mean, Arthur Blank is very involved, too. He's a much better owner, but he's a very involved owner.
I don't know Arthur is a better owner. I don't know. And maybe it's just by process of elimination. Arthur's made a lot of whoopsie-daisies over the last 6 or 7 years that... it's the same thing with Stephen Ross, where Stephen Ross kind of has this, well, he'll do... No, he's a meddler, and he's fired a lot of coaches.
Well, Ross is 100% a meddler, and he's definitely a problem.
He's also 100.
You see the problem? He's 85, okay? He's 85.
That's older than Arthur Blank, who's a spry 83.
I was going to say, he's got to be close.
I think he's got to
be close.
I prefer my younger owner.
I looked up Stephen Ross the other day. That's how I know he's 85. I don't know how old. I always thought Arthur Blank,
83 on the dot. Look at my knowledge of old-ass owners in the NFL.
He looks like death.
Well,
like there's no other way around it.
When you meddle with coaches this
Stephen
much.
Stephen Ross has aged much better than Arthur Blank
has. He also lives in Miami.
Arthur Blank looks like he's been 95.
They've got all the good drugs in Miami.
For like 15 years.
Atlanta, that's a place.
It's been a really long time. He's looked really, really old.
Like you go to the middle of Florida, not good
Stephen
drugs.
Ross could get to some tables over there in Miami still and be almost formidable.
I'd rather not.
Wouldn't you think the Miami sun would really just wear on him?
Can I tell you, I have said, pursue him with a tenacity. You got to go after him and get a bird dog him, right?
Yeah.
If he says no, he says no.
Yeah.
But you got to try. But if he says no, there is a part of me that I'm going to treat John Harbaugh to the Browns as the Browns are being used as leverage until John was named the Browns head coach, right? Meaning like, maybe this is protecting myself. But do I think that the Browns are probably third or fourth on his list? Yeah, I think right now the Browns have to make up the difference that the other NFL franchises have on them, right? So I'm going to treat that the Browns, because of Jimmy Haslam's reputation as a guy that, with the Deshaun trade and going the extra mile and the personal touch and all this stuff, I'm going to treat this that way. Just because I think that's probably more fair to the Browns in this situation. Like the Giants fans, if they don't get John Harbaugh, they should talk about it like they fumbled the generational bag. Because that seems to be the job he's most interested in. The Falcons at this point, everyone's pointing to Miami so much that if they don't get him, they should be treated like you must have really screwed this up. If the Browns don't, to me it's almost a no-lose situation for the Browns. Because if you don't get him, the response should be, as probably longer odds than the other jobs anyways.
Yeah, no one's got the expectation. But then shouldn't he have started with the Browns? If he's going to use the Browns as leverage, wouldn't he have wanted their all-in, push the chips in the middle of the table, basically deal, and then you take that to other teams?
Oh, I don't think you need it yet. I think this is the, hey, just so like, you know,
What team is he trying to do this for? I would think it'd be New York.
Yeah, I would too.
And so like if that whole goal, I guess as long as you're ahead of New York then, and then you present all this and everything that everyone can offer to the Giants and say, this is what I need, here you go.
I mean, listen, I think the Mara family is less likely to throw their GM over the side of the thing to make way for Harbaugh than the Browns are. I think the Mara family's a lot less likely to pay.
Which is wild because Joe Shane should have been fired after this year.
Well, but they are a chintzier franchise. I think it's more about this is going to sound like I'm taking a shot at the Haslams. They're very conscientious of how their word is portrayed when it comes to making a promise to somebody. That doesn't mean it's real. It doesn't mean they're better than, quote, the Haslams, but it's a perceptional thing that they take very seriously. I also think the Mara family and the Tisch family are chintzy. They don't spend a lot on coaches and GMs. They don't. They're not Mike Brown, but they're not Jimmy Haslam, who was unafraid at one point to pay three different head coaches at one time. So I think that's another thing, that if you want $20 million a year and you're John Harbaugh,
yeah,
you're going to have to pry loose with another team. I don't know Arthur Blank does it in the same way that Jimmy Haslam does it, just because of Jimmy's wild card reputation.
Part of what I've wondered within why the Belichick thing fell through with Arthur and the whole thing with the Falcons was whether or not Belichick was asking for too much money. Like, because you didn't have to pay Raheem Morris nearly as much as you had to pay Belichick. It's part of the thing we talk about with the Raiders. Raiders are paying so many coaches right now so much money, but Al Davis and the Davis family really doesn't have a lot of liquid to themselves. They don't. Mm-hmm. They're a really poor NFL franchise, all things considered. They're not going to be able to spend $30 million in order to go ahead and try to get that done, $30 million a year.
I also think it's interesting. You mentioned the thing about Arthur Blank. And again, he is thought to be a very nice man and a very considerate man and somebody that treats people very well.
He gets treated like a Disney grandpa.
He does. And I think there's a reason. Again, another guy that I think is really good with the media in a really cool way. That being said, this is a guy who, when his organization was still in the path for the playoffs, still had a chance to make a run for the division, started undermining his current GM and head coach, who, as he was undermining them, went out and basically made a late push for the division. I know they ended up coming up short.
They won the Final Four.
The best they could do was kind of play spoiler.
Final Four games, that is.
They ended up 8-9.
Yeah.
Like, this is a guy who, like, in October decided Matt Ryan was going to be his football of operations, even though they went through a totally legit search just now. So, like, I would imagine that's a huge thing that Arthur Blank has to, answer to. I don't see why Matt Ryan is all of a sudden a guy that John Harbaugh can go, this is why I want to go there.
Do you also think it was funny how the CBS desk did, like, this whole farewell thing for Matt Ryan?
Yeah, he was on that for 2 years, and he was unforgettable.
He was not good at it. It was only 2 years, and they acted like it was like Jim Nantz stepping away for the final time.
Yeah, it was really weird.
What was that?
And by the way, is Tom Brady the only guy that gets to circumvent every rule when it comes to broadcasters and owners in football? Because I should see no reason why Mr. Football Ops, Matt Ryan, who basically has the same role that Tom Brady does, just without, you know, minority ownership, why he couldn't stay on his crappy job.
It's way less involved than what Brady's is.
Oh,
because Brady meets with the teams and actually discusses things that are on the inside. Matt Ryan was just showing up on Sundays and talking.
So it's a train wreck. Atlanta is a bit of a train wreck.
Yeah, but they have good pieces, though. You know, you have Bijan, you have Drake London. Like, you have some good pieces.
But you have pieces. Myles Garrett is a real piece.
Oh, I'm not saying the Browns don't. I think the Browns are in play here.
But I think that's what's funny to me is...
I don't see Harbaugh with Atlanta just because it just seems like a weird fit to me. I never thought Harbaugh to Atlanta.
I don't love the logic of, like, Harbaugh wants to compete.
Right, you think Harbaugh's going to go that division because he wants life on easy street? Like, that doesn't add up to me either.
Also, he's 63. He wants to win a championship. Like, so, I don't know. It's just weird to me.
It's a weird fit.
However, that I think is the thing that the Browns aren't getting enough credit for. And again, I'm not talking about just about Harbaugh. I'm talking about in general. Guys have got a lot of great pieces on defense. And even if we go to the younger crowd, Carson Schwesinger, Mason Graham, Tyson Campbell's interesting because you just traded for him. And we'll see how much that factors in. But you have four or five cornerstones of the defensive side of the ball. And I'm going to say that... that other coaches pay attention to Fannin and Quinshon as I'm pretty sure they're going to look at those guys as building blocks too. So it's weird to me that like Bijan's an incredible player.
Bijan's great.
All-world player. Who would you rather have on your team for the next 3 years, Myles Garrett or Bijan Robinson? I'm going to guess people are still going to say Myles Garrett.
Well, yeah, I mean, Miles is the best defensive player on planet Earth.
Well, but I think for some reason, the Browns aren't getting credit for Myles Garrett in the way that...
I think it's just because the offensive side of the ball looks like it's got a much cleaner chance of survival than... And really, this is an offensive league. That's really what that is.
No, fair, but like, guys...
But you don't know what Penix is going to be, and that would scare me.
If I'm picking a team based off their best player, or who I think could be their best player, well, I can coach Jackson Dart, or I can coach Myles Garrett. Guy who might be the next Tua when it comes to concussions, or like maybe the greatest edge rusher of this generation. I really don't know.
Best
quarterback in the NFL.
Very few teams involved in this are going to be able to stack up with if we're just doing your top players and that's it. Because ours is Myles Garrett.
So it's not.
But you have to add more than that.
No, totally fair. I think it's more that for some reason the Browns are looked at as an absolute abyss. This isn't the Browns anymore. Like, this is the whoever this head coach is, isn't stepping into the same job.
Every team has guys, too, right? Like, if you talk about the Giants, we can go through Malik Nabers and then Scadaboo and then Abdul Carter and Thibodeau and all those guys. Raiders, we can bring up Max Crosby. Then we can bring all sorts of different guys.
But I think
best tight end in the game and Brock Bowers.
But like, I don't think the Browns are getting their credit for that.
Okay.
So, like, I'm hearing about Malik Nabers and Jackson Dart in New York.
So, when we say Browns, you should be saying Myles Garrett and then... And then
Carson Schwesinger. I would say Denzel Ward. Harold Fannin Jr.
Like I would go Myles Garrett and Denzel Ward. That's how I would start that convo. But then I think everyone just skews so much of the defense or the offensive side of the ball that we get lost in that a little bit.
Harold Fannin Jr., baby. BG's finest.
I'm sorry to tell you this, but Brock Bowers and Harold Fannin Jr. aren't in the same class right now.
Okay, we can step outside now if you want to.
I hate to break it to you.
I hate to break you.
The rest of the NFL is just slow on this. They're just slow on this. They're taking some time to get up on that. But Brock Bowers right now, different class.
We head out to the Make It Right, Call Kyle Wright hotline, NFL.com, Cleveland's own. This is a good guy right here. Nick Shook, what's up, buddy?
What's going on, fellas? Happy last day of an amazing wild card weekend. I don't know. It's no holiday. It's playoff time, baby.
I don't know, dude. That was so awesome. Is that because really the only letdown was just the quality of the Patriots-Chargers game? Was that as good of a wild card round as you can remember?
Yes, and unfortunately it happens a couple years after they swiped the super tag from Super Wild Card Weekend because it defines Super Wild Card Weekend.
What do you think the difference is between Super Wild Card Weekend and, you know, regular old Wild Card Weekend?
Branding and realizing that it's a mouthful just because you expanded the playoffs by a couple of teams. You know, you add Super to it now. We're all adjusted. It's just back to Wild Card.
What about Mega Wild Card Weekend?
Mega Super.
Let's take it to 18 teams. Let's put more than half the league in. Then it can be Mega Super Fun Wild Card Weekend.
Browns would have a chance to make it then. All right, let's go back to this part here. I have surmised, this is how I'm going to treat it until something changes, that John Harbaugh is using the Browns, amongst other teams, as maybe leverage in his quest to get the job he wants. Do you agree with that mentality?
Yeah, I think that the entire Harbaugh experience is going to be nothing more than a bidding war, and that he'll have his, you know, pick of the litter, depending on, you know, you got to have a little bit of agreement between, you know, ownership, franchise leadership. There's, you know, it's been floated that he wants his own GM, which I think a coach of his stature, that makes complete sense. But yeah, I think what you're going to get is a lot of reports, maybe some conflicting, that are floated out there that he's interested in this team, and then this team's interested in him, and this team wants to make a huge offer to him, and that sort of thing. And it's all in the name of one effort, which is to drive up the price for the coach. And ultimately, I hate to say it, but just looking at, you know, different team situations, I don't think the Browns would be in the top three on his priority list, but I could be wrong.
All right, so if not McCarthy, how does this shake out for the Browns? Is it McDaniel, or is it one of these young guys like Grant Yudinski or Dan Pitcher?
Yeah, so I thought Zach Jackson put out something that was really interesting about Dan Pitcher's association with the Browns, those who are in charge with the Browns, and the history, you know, the connection between them. Because a lot of the times that these coaches are hired, it's a big league, but it's a small world, as you guys know. And it really comes down to, who do you know? Who have you worked with in the past? Who do you align with? So I think a guy like Pitcher could be a legitimate candidate. I know that wouldn't get Browns fans excited, because I know Browns fans are hoping for some crazy combination of Robert Saleh as the head coach and Mike McDaniel as his OC, and you just bring over the Shanahan tree minus Shanahan. But don't be surprised if it ends up being a name that is not as attractive in the headline. It's tough to judge for the Browns as opposed to some other teams, because what do they lack that other teams have? And I know this will spark a whole other conversation with you guys, which I'm happy to get into. But the Titans have Cam Ward. The Giants have Jackson Dart. Two quarterbacks that each franchise believes can be their franchise quarterback. The Browns have Shedeur Sanders. We know the whole discourse on there. It is not as rock solid as those other situations are perceived to be. And there's also these potential, you know, pieces that could still move. What with the Packers, you know, losing to the Bears in the fashion that they did, and Matt LaFleur, but, you know, that involvement, you could continue to go down the list, even with the lack of, you know, Greg Roman potentially being out as an offensive coordinator. Do the Eagles, do they move on from Nick Sirianni and Kevin Petullo? Is it a staff change situation again, like it was a couple of years ago, or are bigger changes coming? There are still pieces that could move, that could change the landscape of this and make it into one of the spicier coaching carousels that we've seen in a while. So I think all options are on the table, but for the Browns situation, what you have is a very good defense coordinated by a defensive coordinator who should probably also get looks as a head coach. He's only been a head coach once, and if we're talking other retreads, why not include Jim Schwartz in the mix? But you have an offense that needs a lot of work. You have an existing general manager that the Browns have already backed. And unless they pull a Liam Cohen power move and get the GM kicked out of there for him to go take the job, it makes it a little less, I don't know if it's attractive is the word, as much as possible for every candidate to be potentially on board, because they do have to mesh with the existing GM. So there's a few hurdles that the Browns are going to have to clear that maybe some other teams don't have. But and I think that ends up leaving a lot of our options open, including some lesser known names.
It is Mike McDaniel Day today for the Browns. They've actually put out that they've conducted an interview with Mike McDaniel. Would Mike McDaniel be a downgrade from Kevin Stefanski?
It's interesting. I think offensive creativity-wise, no. Browns fans might like to see what he could do with this offense, but it's hard to compare between his time in Miami and potential time with the Browns, because who the Dolphins had, you know, as weapons. Now, they never had a great offensive line. They had an okay offensive line. They had Tua at quarterback, but they had legitimate weapons outside. Tyreek Hill, Jalen Waddle, you know, you got Devon Achane. And they were able to do some really fun creative things, especially when they were at the peak of their powers. And as any Browns fan will happily admit, the Browns lacked those weapons. Not at running back necessarily, but they definitely lacked it at receiver. So it might take on a bit of a different appearance if he were to be the head coach. And there's also, you kind of look at the way that the Dolphins, his tenure, you know, it eventually ended. It's almost, I don't know if it's because of his personality or what, but there wasn't necessarily the strongest sense of leadership being exuded there. Now, I think the rift with Tua had a lot to do with that. Tua just calling out teammates for not showing up to players-only meetings, being very candid with reporters, seemed to demonstrate a lack of, you know, maybe control on the part of the head coach. So it would be different from the Kevin Stefanski, Andrew Berry robotic era, where they just give you the, you know, the most PR coached responses publicly. They never really, you know, give you too much insight into what's really going on, and they keep everything close to the vest. But I don't think on the field it would be a downgrade. I think it would be comparable. It would look different. It would open the avenues to different styles of offense than what the Browns have run. And then it just comes down to fit. But I don't think in total it's a downgrade. It might just look like it.
Are the Browns going to lose Jim Schwartz?
That all depends on who they hire as head coach, right? I think that there's a good chance that they are willing to sacrifice him in order to get the head coach that they want. So if I had to lean one direction or the other, I would say yes, because it's really hard to convince a new head coach to come in and say, oh, but by the way, you have to keep this defensive coordinator. If they're willing to do that, that's one thing. But if they come in and they're told they have to keep that guy, I think that's going to eliminate some candidates. And if that eliminates the Browns, you know, most desired candidates, then yeah, I think that he would end up being sacrificed in order to hire the right guy. It's just, it's another hurdle that you're creating to hire the guy that you necessarily want to hire, that you could eliminate if you said, all right, we're willing to part with him if you want to come in as a new coach and get your own staff. And because again, like I said, the NFL, big world, but it's all about who you know. It's all about who you trust, who you've coached with before. And oftentimes when coaches come in, they want to fill their own staff out.
Yeah, the problem is I'm not getting rid of Jim Schwartz for Dan freaking Pitcher. Right?
That's fair. Yeah, I mean, that's fair. But what do you value more? Like, are you trying to create some happy partnership where I value my defensive coordinator so much that he's not good enough to be my head coach, but he's good enough to still be my defensive coordinator with a head coach that a lot of people maybe have never heard of or maybe aren't excited to bring in just because he's an offensive mind? Like, you're trying to create this happy little perfect marriage, and I don't know if that necessarily exists. It's just not as simple as that. So if it comes down to that where you're like, I need to have Jim Schwartz on my staff no matter what, then he's going to end up being your head coach.
Yeah, Nick, I know it seems really hard to answer this question, so if you just want to be like, I don't have a great answer for this, I'll completely understand. But when it comes to this offseason, we don't even have our head coach yet. We don't know who the quarterback is going to be. But how aggressive do you feel like Andrew Berry is going to have to be in order to get these things at least turned around in a 3-4-5 win advantage from last year this offseason?
I mean, that's a fantastic question. We have to start with the finances, right? I mean, let's look at the Browns going into 2026. As it stands right now, according to Over the Cap, they are $15 million in the red. Now, that's not a big total. There's been off seasons in which the Saints were $80 million in the red, and they extended some guys, restructured. I think only two of the 10 guys that I thought they were going to move on from that year ended up leaving. One retired, one got traded somewhere else. They kept the key guys on their team. But the problem with the Browns is they have a lot of non-active cap charges against them. We have, you know, according to this site, that Dalvin Tomlinson, $12.1 million. Juan Thornhill, $5.6 million. And the numbers continue, because if you look at the cap going into 2026, you got guys who are on void years with massive cap numbers. You got Wyatt Teller, $10.3 million. Joel Bitonio, $23.5 million, which he may retire. We'll find out with that. David Njoku, $24.3 million. These are their cap numbers going into next year to not even be on the team, because of the way Berry has been aggressive to try to keep this team competitive and stay in the winning window that really hasn't existed with them. Nobody has loved tacking on void years in the NFL more than Andrew Berry. And that all goes back to the Watson deal. They restructure Watson annually by adding on void years to create immediate cap space to be able to add players of quality. And they can do that again. It's just that eventually the mountain starts to pile up and you have to kind of take a reset year or two. They don't have the time. They don't have the leash to do that. So I would expect that he approaches it in a similar fashion. It's just that the margin, you're working with less and less every year, and it's going to be very challenging. And you also have to try to figure out how to convince guys to come play for a team that has a very good defense. May not have its defensive coordinator. We'll find out with who they hire. And also has an offense that was one of the lowest ceiling operations in the NFL last year. So there's a lot of work left to be done. And I caution Browns fans to stop, or at least avoid creating some sort of free agent wish list this year, because they're just not operating with the same amount of financial power, at least as it stands right now, as some other teams are.
All right, Nick, you texted me late last week that you have a final conclusion on Shador's rookie season, which may or may not include a compromise for entering 2026.
Mm. You ready for it?
I don't know because I definitely am. There's as much of a chance you're going to annoy me as you are going to make me go like, hey, I think we can work
it
with
this.
It would
be a real turn if Nick was like, I'm going to come on and say something nice and then didn't.
I'm not a heel. Come on now. Okay, so I will say this first. I think you guys are among the more optimistic and positive-leaning pairs in Cleveland media when it comes to Shador. And I give you credit for that because it's hard to stay optimistic in Cleveland when it comes to the Browns. So good for you on that. I, after reviewing everything and watching every snap of every play, or every play of every game this season, I've come to accept that the most realistic outcome for his career, and this is going to upset a lot of people, is a plus version of Jacoby Brissett. That is what I could absolutely see happening in his career. Okay. That means that you are a reliable quarterback who is going to pilot an offense consistently. Let's look at Arizona. They went to Jacoby because they couldn't trust Kyler Murray to actually convert third downs, and their offense got better with him this year. Now, granted, they lost most of those games that he played, but that was a sign of respect and appreciation for Jacoby. Shador could be that, but better, plus version of that. That means that you're getting a chance to compete for one or two starting jobs in the NFL, and at minimum, you have a guaranteed long-term career as a valued backup that a lot of teams are always going to be interested in from one offseason to the next. Now, that is my realistic outcome. Could it be better? Yes. If the situation around him gets better, yes. But I think that we should all kind of understand that he has earned the right to compete for the starting job in 2026. He got incrementally better from week to week. He became more valuable as a scrambler. He still took some awful sacks because he hangs onto the ball too long, which is very typical of rookie quarterbacks. His offensive line wasn't great, but it also wasn't quite as bad as folks might want to point out in defense of him. He did disappear for significant stretches and didn't help them in key spots, but he finished strong, and he ultimately proved that he deserves more time with this team and the opportunity to compete for a starting job. A lot of that will have to do with the coach that they hire and what they want to do with the position. I expect them to bring in a veteran competitor. That would just be the prudent decision on their part. But he wasn't terrible. He wasn't great. And you can carve out a long career by being a Jacoby Brissett, who people in Cleveland really loved that one year, and other teams continue to love to employ and turn to in times of need.
Well, I guess I was wrong. I guess you really can't tell if you're going to say something nice
when you see the video on this, he did roll his eyes.
And roll that. I mean, that was not the compliment you think it is. That's like somebody coming up and be like, hey, you're not as ugly as I thought you are. What? Well intentioned.
That's the guarantee. I said he could be better than that. That's just where I see.
It's well intentioned thought by you, but it was not very nice. The end of it is not very nice.
I'm sorry. We can't all be as aspirational, you know?
That's all right.
I will say, I think you did give us the compromise, which is he will battle for the starting job this year, which I think makes a lot of sense. I can at least go there. I've said I think the better version of him is some cross between Geno Smith and Kirk Cousins. JP?
That's not very far off. That's the higher end of the ceiling that I see as well.
And I said Trevor Lawrence.
Not that far. He's not going to be that guy. But I could totally see a Geno type of
right situation, right spot. You get some good skill position players around him, good coach. You know what I'm talking about. It's amazing, though. I mean, he had nothing, absolutely nothing, Nick, to work with.
I mean, I've seen worse.
You've seen worse?
Geno went through it. Yes, what Geno went through in Vegas this year was markedly worse than what the Browns had.
Absolutely. Really? I mean, we had the worst graded offensive line. There's not a receiving core that is worse. They at least had Brock Bowers. Brock Bowers alone tilts it in the Raiders scale.
Brock Bowers was injured early in the season, and by the time he came back, it was the middle to the latter portion of the season, and he wasn't able to carry them from there.
Ashton Jeanty and Brock Bowers is better than Quinshon and then Harold Fannin and whatever else.
How dare you?
Not when you're playing behind the worst offensive line in the NFL. And I know the grades skew toward the Browns, but I'm telling you right now, having watched all these games for both teams, nobody had a worse offensive line in the NFL than the Raiders this season.
We got a Shador off right now.
We got a PFF off, too. I'll tell you what the PFF grades say, okay?
Well,
right?
I have full respect for PFF. I appreciate those folks very much. But like I said, I've watched every play of every game in the NFL this year.
Oh, yeah. I watched Cam Robinson and KT Levinston, okay?
Hey, I'm not a fan of Levinson.
You can't tell me the Raiders have a lot worse than KT Levinson and Cam Robinson on a consistent basis.
Well, you need to go look at Forsyth and Glaze.
Luke Whipler, Cam Robinson, KT Levinson, and Tevin Jenkins were all on the same offensive line together at the same time. You can't tell me the Raiders were worse.
I promise you they were. I say that as confidently as possible.
This is like Roman Greco wrestling back in the gladiator days, except both guys end up mildly excited.
You see what happened, though. Gino wasn't able to do anything, though. But I think this is a good case study for you, Nick, though. Because Gino wasn't able...
Nick? We're both Nick.
Nick Shook.
Okay.
Sorry about that. Because Gino at one point has been good in the NFL. We've seen him be good. He was good in Seattle. He lit it up in Seattle. And then you move him to the Raiders with... And we argued who's got the worst offensive line. Let's just agree, trash was trash. And then Gino looked awful this year. He was unplayable this year. And that kind of speaks to the idea that Shador didn't have much of a chance. If Gino was look good in his NFL career, good enough to get $100 million salaries, all of a sudden looks like trash. Can't imagine what a rookie in seven games would look like. Oh, wait, I can. Yeah. It was Shador this last year.
That's fair, but I don't think that Gino was necessarily unplayable. I think he was a victim of the circumstances. And I'm not
that's what I'm saying about Shador.
About Sanders. But what I'm saying is that Gino still threw for 3,000 yards, and there were games in which he'd randomly throw for 300 yards and try to keep them competitive. But he would.
And Shador had a game where he threw for 364 yards and randomly kept the Browns competitive. What do you do? It's the same thing.
It's similar, but I'm telling you right now, the argument with Gino is that there's nothing he could have done. And
that's
you know
the argument for Shador right here, too.
Let's think about strengths and weaknesses, though. Gino is a guy who, with time, will try to fit passes into small windows, usually does it on time, makes proper reads, gets the ball out on time. He tried that this year with this team, rarely had time to throw, ended up throwing a career-high 17 interceptions, still threw 19 touchdowns, got banged up throughout the year. And just on the eye test alone, Gino and Shador, not the same, but I actually kind of like the comparison overall. And it's fair to say, okay, Shador wasn't put in the best situation, and he was a rookie who came in behind a bad offensive line. But ultimately, between the two, I don't think they're as comparable as you might think.
All right. You're a very reasonable human, I'll give you that.
All right. I'd tell you guys to hug it out, but you might end up sword fighting. Nick, great stuff, buddy. Appreciate you.
Thank you, Nick. That was very reasonable by you.
Yep, as always. Love you guys. Thanks for having me on.
All right, buddy. Nick Shook there, NFL.com on the Make It Right Call Kyle Wright hotline. Spicy.
Not spicy.
Oh,
very reasonable.
We had a nerd off, and I love it.
Very reasonable. I was
proud of both my boys there. You guys, that was some high-level jousting.
It's fun to joust with him.
Ooh.
Although, I just keep thinking, I'm going to the bathroom with Nick. Yeah, we're going to do a sword fight here? No, I'm going to the bathroom, Nick. That's all I can think about.
Just think about crossing streams.
I was like,
react to Nick. That was other. He was talking about me, Nick, not Nick Shook.
No,
there
not
was
Nick
not.
Shook.
Yeah,
no
sword fighting there, except on air.
The odd part about it is you typically don't see number two, number three overall ranked defenses, and then they need a new head coach.
Yeah,
like that's what makes it so unique and so different. Like even I'm just trying to think of past examples in my head of times this has popped up, but you don't have dominant defenses and these bad of teams. You have to have an historically bad offense in order to get fired when you have that good of a defense.
Like,
and the Browns had it.
Like, I feel I'm pretty realistic on Schwartz. Like, I do want to leave some of this up to him because if he's upset with things, I can understand the business of this, right? I don't want him to go to Baltimore and become the defensive coordinator there for obvious reasons with Kevin Stefanski. That feels a little unoriginal and unauthentic by Baltimore. But, like, to some degree, I'm willing to work with Jim Schwartz here. But if Dan freaking Pitcher goes, hey, my deal breaker is Schwartz, you got Al Golden as your defensive coordinator. What in the blue hell are you talking about?
I just don't know why. And listen, Nick Shook is right about the idea that a lot of these guys come in and they want their own people and they've been dreaming about this forever, so they're going to get their own guys. I just don't know if you're Dan Pitcher why you'd have any argument with Jim Schwartz.
And the same thing with Mike McDaniel. Like, part of what sunk Mike McDaniel in Miami was they had some bad defenses there. They had a lot of names. Guys like Bradley Chubb, Emmanuel Ogba was there for a hot minute. They've had plenty of names, but they didn't have a lot of production. Well, you've got it. Like, if I'm Mike McDaniel, you mean all I have to do is walk into this thing and call plays on offense and run the offense, and I get a guy that can hold down the defense? I think like Jim Schwartz.
But that's the dream. That's what Stefanski had. That was the dream.
I would just look at Jim Schwartz as like the ultimate best friend to have as a head coach,
exactly,
because he
right.
just takes care of a side of the ball. Like, and again, like, it. Listen, if it comes down to you get John Harbaugh or you don't for Jim Schwartz, I'll probably have to side on the side of the head coach, right? Like, I'll have to side with John Harbaugh, but I will be a little disgruntled with it. Anybody else? Hey, you can. Hey, who's your OC? Who's your O-line coach? You choose those things. But, like, whether it's McDaniel or Dan Pitcher or Grant Yudinski or, honestly, even Brian Flores, like, with love and respect, Brian, I'm not hiring you to coordinate a defense. I'm hiring you to win games. So we're going to keep Jim Schwartz in there. We're going to keep the wide nine off defense in there, and then you figure everything else out.
I just, if it's not broke, don't fix, you know, don't mess with it. I feel like it's the type of thing that just makes so much sense to us. But when you get in these spots, they like people, they dream their whole lives for this. And so they want some more power. They want more control. And some people are stubborn about it. But if it was me, I'd be like, just give me the defensive coordinator. That's awesome.
Wait. So you're telling me the defense was like top 10 last year and that Myles Garrett, the guy who's like the face of the defense, is incredibly happy with that defensive coordinator? Well, I think I'm going to need a whole new defense. Can we run the 1-5?
This is why I thought guys like Dan Pitcher would be in play. Is because guys like Dan Pitcher don't get to come with any high expectations about who their defensive coordinator is. Like if you're Grant Yudinski at 30 years old, you take whatever they give you.
Now you're already out on Yudinski because face.
No, we're not up. Very punchable face. Also trust fund face. It was very confusing to me what type of face he offered up. Okay. But I've been reading a lot about him now.
Yeah.
Okay. I've been reading a little bit more about him, and I'm starting to become a little infatuated with him.
But here's the problem.
I'm starting to become a little. Now, there's one thing I don't believe, and I never believe this when I hear it. There's Kevin O'Connell claims that he's got a photographic memory.
Uh-huh.
I never believe that when people say it. I think I just.
Do they need to prove it like McVay?
I want him to prove it. McVay did it in a ridiculous way.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, I tend to think most people that think they have a photographic memory are lying about it, and they don't actually have a photographic memory. If Grant Yudinski actually does have one, well, Keller, me impressed.
Yeah,
that's a parlor trick I want to sign up for. But I like his introductory.
Does that make you a great head coach?
His introductory press conference.
He can remember every loss in great detail.
But his introductory press conference, I need somebody to ask him about a very, very random play from like 7 years ago or something and see where his recall is.